great to talk to you and glad to be on with you today. You know, it really is an exciting time to talk about political appointees, given that it's an election year. And come the fall, plenty of people are going to want to be political appointees, and lots of us will be talking about them.
So in your book, what knowledge gap are you seeking to fill by interviewing these couple of dozen people?
Well, one of the things we've learned from talking to political appointees in the past is how they tend to forget about the tools and technique they use while they're solving some of the problems. So we wanted to get in and talk to them while they were solving problems and find out some of their approaches and then share it with others.
So you interview people at sort of the six-month mark, the one-year mark, and when they had been in the job for about a year and a half. And overall, looking at these two dozen political appointees, what sort of lessons could you see that they were learning along the way?
Well, first they learned that all jobs are not the same, that some people are cut out for certain jobs and others were not. So one of the tricks was to find the right job. The other was that their experience really did matter, that to the extent they could rely on relevant experience, they were more effective. And the other was just how hard it was to be a political appointee, the relationships not only in their organization but with the Hill and the White House and many other stakeholders.
And one of the more intriguing interviews you have is that with Michael Bromwich. He's the director of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, the old Minerals Management Service. And he came in to clean up what was really a mess at the heart of the function of the organization. In many ways, it was worse than GSA. So what lessons did a man like that learn that maybe Dan Tangerlini could learn now that he has to come into GSA at a tough time like this?
Well, it was interesting you mentioned Bromwich, because one of the things about his background was he had been involved in crisis management. So that was a really interesting selection as a person who knew, had relatively little experience with the organization, but yet had crisis management experience. And so that was a great application. What he learned was, and I think he already knew, was stabilizing the organization, then getting them on a path and working them forward, because going back and revisiting things just was very unproductive for the organization.
So does it mean that management skills, or at least in certain situations, management skills might be more important than actually being a subject matter expert?
It's generally not the case that we found, but in this one, it really worked. The thing I think we focus on is, what are the experiences needed to be successful in the job, and do the people who become the political appointees have the right experiences? So, for example, in mine safety, Joe Main had experience, unfortunately, dealing with mining accidents. So when there were mining accidents, he knew exactly what to do.
We're speaking with Paul Lawrence, the head of federal government consulting practice at Ernst & Young and author of Paths to Making a Difference, Leading in Government, a new book. And what about the standing civil service, the career executives, career managers? What can they do and how can they interact best and vice versa with political leaders brought in to solve problems?
To a man in person, everybody spoke to us about how pleasantly and positively they surprised they were about the caliber of the civil service. Probably not a surprise to you two from what you do. But as a result, they were growing more and more dependent upon the career civil service and liking that. Civil service, in turn, you know, understand what they need to do and work with them. Probably the big challenge now as we come into an election year is keeping that momentum going. And if the political appointees become distracted, the careers need to continue pushing the path forward for the agency.
In the situation of GSA, former head Martha Johnson was in charge of the whole organization, and yet sometimes, well, it's coming out that she gave a lot of control to these career senior executives in some far-flung areas such as California. When you look at these political appointees that you've talked to, what are some of the most important skills that they need to have so that they can really keep control and know what's going on in these organizations that are spread throughout the world?
A lot of them, before they took the job, asked people what to worry about when they got the job past appointees, and they all talked about being focused and not getting distracted. So when we interviewed them, a constant theme was defining the path, communicating it to everybody, and not losing focus. So we would come back, as you point, 6 months later, 12 months later, they had the same conversations with us about what they were doing and how they were concentrating the organization on what they wanted to get done.
Now, you have a lot of deputy secretaries, Scott Gould at Veterans Affairs, Seth Harris at Labor, Dennis Hightower at Commerce, all interviewed in your book. And when you come in as deputy secretary, you're there to kind of run the place and not be the political front man as the secretary is. As a newcomer from the political side, how do you know who you can trust that's already there when you get there?
Well, part of what the deputy secretary needs to do and what we learned was establish the relationship with the secretary to better figure out the balance, as you point out, Tom, between who's going to do what and what happens when the secretary's out of town. We noticed that the trust was established by simply communicating with the entire organization and letting them know what was going to be done and what role the deputy secretary would have. I mean, there's simply no substitute for spending time and communicating with the stakeholders at all levels, not only in the organization, but outside in terms of the people the agency deals with.
But I'm thinking of that individual that might come in, you know, maybe a career manager of some kind who has been rebuffed for many, many years and thinks he's got or she has the absolute answer to these big problems if only anyone had listened. How do you know as a newcomer, well, maybe that person really should be listened to, or are they just the crank that says the same thing to everybody?
I think deputy secretaries have a very hard time dealing with the issue you're describing. They run large organizations, but I can tell you this. Each one of them talked about their desire to go to town hall meetings and get non-standard information like you're describing. So there was a window. Can't say everybody would have their moment as you described, but they did seem to understand the importance of sort of getting out and seeing other people, going to the different offices, engaging in town halls and the like.
So you basically concluded your interviews last summer, or about a year ago, it seems. Given the fact that this is such a marathon, and we're for many of these people, these political appointees, they're nearing the end of it. Do you think if you went back and asked them anything now, you would get different answers?
No, and one of the things I've observed is these folks have stayed longer on average than others. You've heard the rule sort of out in two. Most of the folks we've interviewed are still there and are continuing, and I suspect they would like to stay on if that's possible. So I'm not.
Tell me a little bit about why you think these people stay when most people would leave by now.
Of the ones we talked to, our sense was just a high level of interest in the issues they were working and desire of reward and satisfaction of what they were doing. That's perhaps a trite answer, but one that we just observed. They were very interested in the issues and felt now was the time and this was the chance for them really to make a difference.
Of all the people you interviewed, is there one that you thought just somehow had the toughest problem and did the most?
Well, we interviewed a host of people who were involved in Deepwater a couple summers ago, and so those were rather new problems, and so I felt those challenges the folks were facing were really different, and you saw them applying experiences they had as well as experimenting with new tools to solve these problems, and of course the scrutiny and the pressure were obvious as well.
Because I guess you had an open-ended problem, that oil well in Deepwater. If it didn't get shut off, it would still be leaking.
Exactly. And a couple of the folks we interviewed told us there is no set of – nobody has ever done this. This is not a problem you could ask somebody about. And that was the really interesting thing about we discovered. Other problems, you know, they could rely on past experience, GAO, somebody to give them insights. These were, as you point out, Tom, that was a very new problem.
And briefly, just in the minute or so we have left, you noted something interesting that I wanted you to quickly expand on. You said that these seem to be the right, in your intro, you said these seem to be the right people for the job, and that was surprising. Is that so?
Well, so often a lot of people want to be political appointees, and the general rule is a smart person can do anything. But yet, what we came to understand was all experiences are not equal, and the sense that they had found the right experiences for the kind of challenges people would encounter, that was what we were talking about. We think that was a little bit higher batting average than elsewhere we'd previously seen, and some of the things that sort of played their way out effectively because the experiences had been matched really benefited the organization and, quite frankly, the country.